morning. Just about to start today's Talk Live session. We'll be taking up the topic of longevity, whether it's a value. And we'll be basing it on a quote from Siddiq Adin, from a phrase that we cite at the cemetery upon the interment of an individual. Yeah, it's one statement, but there seems to be a number of parts to it. And we'll start just momentarily. All the classes online, usually within a half an hour or so of the conclusion. So if there's any part of the class that you do miss, you can always go to our audio page and listen to the classes from there in their entirety. And we'll start in about 1 minute. Once we start, we will paste the actual phrase on screen so you'll be able to see it if you're joining us over the internet. We will pause and also ask certain questions, so you will have time to comment during that pause. And we just ask that you reserve the comments and questions to the topic that we're discussing at this time. Any other questions that you may have, feel free, as always, to send an email to the site. And we'll start just as soon as our friends call in. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing okay. However, we are having a problem with getting access to our conference line. I don't think it's the conference problem. We're getting an all circuits are busy. Please try your call later message.
Well, our phone here has conferencing. We can call you and I think one more number. If you want to do it that way.
Okay, it would be a long-distance call for you.
Yeah, but I think that we are covered. Shouldn't be a problem.
Okay, the number you need to call...
Okay, one sec. I'll need to get both yours and then conference in the other number, right? So you need both your number and the other number, so go ahead.
Okay, Okay, or you can you conference in the other number and keep us on?
I think I have to do the calling out right now. I don't think I can do it if you call in.
Okay, our number is 425-673-4395.
And the other number?
620-782-8800. And the access code you would use on that number is *297123.
Okay, I'm going to call you right back, and then I'll try to conference that in.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay, hold on, let me try that. Okay. Doug?
ERGT3.
Doug?
Yeah.
Yeah, I listened to the message.
We're sorry, the number you're calling from has been temporarily suspended from making calls. Please contact customer service for assistance.
Well, that's kind of weird.
ERGT3.
Hold on a second. Hello?
Nope.
You're still there.
Here.
Okay. All right, your call. What do you think we should do?
Why don't I try it once more, and then, I mean, you got people online, too, and we can't hold them up, so...
No, it's okay. We're just taking a few minutes. I think people will be all right with that.
Okay. Let me, keep you... Well, let me hang up and try... actually, if we can keep you on, let me try the conference line one more time.
Okay, good. Give it a shot.
And, otherwise, I'm going to hang up with you.
Okay.
Okay. Stand by.
Okay, in the meantime, until we get the phone working here, what we'll do is put the actual phrase online so all of you who have joined us online can now take a look at the actual statement that we're dealing with today and consider. Then think about what the questions might be on that. I just posted that on your screen right now. And think about what the questions might be. And once we hear your questions, then we'll post the questions that we have from our end, just so you can see what we view as being the issues in that statement. And again, that's a statement that's recited at the burial, at the conclusion of the burial.
Rabbi?
Yes, I'm here.
We're sorry. All circuits are busy now, but will you please try your call again later?
Let me call you back.
Okay. All right. So that's the statement that we're dealing with right now. Again, I'll just read it out loud. The quote is, again, when it's at the conclusion of the interment at the cemetery, and it states as follows. Man, whether he be a year old or if he lives to 1,000 years, what benefit is it to him? He will eventually be as one who never existed. Blessed is the true judge, meaning God, who kills and brings back to life. So this is what we are going to consider today. And think it over and see what questions you might have. And feel free to put them on screen. And we'll discuss them briefly. And hopefully our friends from Seattle will be able to get the conference on. Hello?
Hi, Rabbi.
Hey.
I don't think there's anything we can do, but just go ahead and we can't get in, we can't get in.
Okay, fair enough.
You just get us this morning.
And I'm going to have to actually duck out probably shortly before.
I'll be here.
Cal will be here.
All right, very good. Well, really, I think you might get all of it as, because it's really, we'll see how the discussion goes, but there was something, I had attended a funeral this week, and on the way out there, we were discussing, there was one of the phrases at the end, and the phrase is, man, whether he be a year old, or if he lives to 1,000 years, what benefit is it to him? He will eventually be as one who never existed. Blessed is the true judge who kills and brings back to life. I'll read it again. Man, whether he be a year old, or if he lives to 1,000 years, what benefit is it to him? He will eventually be as one who never existed. Blessed is the true judge who kills and brings back to life. So this statement is all, you know, requires elucidation. We want to at first see what is the initial problems that present itself to us. Okay, and Dove, I guess that's Canada or California. We see your comment on screen. Let's just wait a moment. We'll all, and we'll address it. Again, man, whether he be a year old, or if he lives to 1,000 years, what benefit is it to him? He eventually dies, and he will be as one who never existed. Blessed is the true judge who kills and brings back to life. So what strikes us as being questionable? Do you have an art scroll sitter there, Doug, Cal?
Yeah, I can get one.
I'll tell you that. I think it's page 798. It's the fourth to the last sentence on that page. Well, actually, the fifth. The fifth to the end. And just to address you, Dove, and JHSWH in, I guess, Netherlands, yes, this refers to all men, and also, it doesn't mean he didn't do anything worthwhile in life. It means that once man is dead, regardless whether he lives a year or 1,000 years, the statement is questioning whether there was any worth to that existence, because he eventually is no longer existing. And it's equating him to somebody who never existed at all. Okay. And Rosora, you're asking, are we not supposed to learn in this life? We can learn more in 100 years than in 1 year. That is true. But that's not what they're debating, whether or not we have an obligation to learn. The statement is questioning whether after a person dies, was there any greater benefit to a man who lived 1,000 over a man who lived 1 year?
Rabbi, did you say page 798?
Yes, in the art scroll.
Ashkenazic or Sephardic?
I got the Ashkenaz, I believe.
What I'm looking at, I'm on the page called Acceptance of Judgment Under Death and Bereavement.
Right.
Okay.
That's right, and the paragraph starts with the word Adam. Like halfway down, a little past halfway down.
Oh, okay, I got it.
Right. So it seems that yeah, there's a very bold statement being made here, so let me just put it out to all of you to see if there's any questions that strike you as being inconsistent or questionable.
Well, I was away getting the siddur, so I might have missed something, but it seems like if a person's place in Olam Haba has to do with how much they have learned and carry with them, then it would seem like one who lives 1,000 years and has the chance to learn more would be in a better place than one who only lives a day.
Agreed. So it would seem questionable how you could even make the statement. I mean, who is? I guess the first thing we really have to do is question, who is this referring to? Because we know you have all of us, so that seems to you have, we have the future world. So it appears that it's talking about just mortal life itself. If we just isolate the earthly life without considering Olam Haba, that's the first thing we have to posit, that that's what this must be dealing with. Because we agree, the person who has learned a lot and has come closer to God, right, this is Rezora's question. So it can't be discussing a person who has eternal life, because then there is, of course, a benefit to the greater amount of knowledge. Right.
Then why would it address someone who isn't following the Torah path?
Well, it's not saying that following the Torah path, it's just isolating physical life. What it's trying to do, I believe, is if we just isolate physical life itself, is there any benefit to a short or long physical life, existence on earth? If we just isolate life itself aside from adherence to Torah, excluding that type of lifestyle.
Oh, so if we take Torah out of the picture.
Right, we take Torah out of the picture, and we have a person who lives 1 year or 1,000 years. And maybe it's good that it's talking about a comparison between a person who dies at one and a person who dies at 1,000, because a person who dies at one certainly has not had the chance to be involved in any Torah life whatsoever. So there has to be some equation then. We can't say there's no difference between if we're talking about Torah, the question is absurd to say, what's the difference between a baby and a guy who lives living Torah for 100 years? Of course, that's obvious what the difference is, if we're talking about Torah. So then there wouldn't be a question with up. So, but the only way we can have a question between the comparison of 1 and 100, if we're dealing with all things being equal, meaning a purely physical life without Torah being part of the picture. Otherwise, the question would be baseless.
Well, if we're talking in terms of what good is it in terms of the whole universe or even that person, I mean, once they die, again, if Torah's out of the picture, they're gone. So if they had 1 day worth of experiencing life versus 1,000 years, that doesn't really make any difference.
Oh, well, it's actually, the words are, what benefit is it to him? So not in terms of the scheme of things for the universe, but if we look at the words, it asks, what benefit is it, whether he lives a year or 1,000 years, what benefit is it to him? Now, does that seem like a prosperous type of a question? We would respond that, well, of course, a guy who lives 100 years, 1,000 years, he definitely enjoyed a greater amount of life. I mean, doesn't that sound like a plausible response?
Yeah, but it seems like due to man's nature, without training of the mind that Torah gives him, man lives primarily through his emotions. And that...
So he had an enjoyable life. He had a lot of steaks, he saw a lot of scenery, he traveled the world. Why can't we say that at least he had a good life? A person who died after 1 year, what did they have? Why can't I say that that is a benefit?
But I guess the question I would ask is, how is it a benefit to him? I mean, he had an experience, but once he dies, it's gone and there's nothing that continues to exist. It does him no long-term good.
Right. It does him no long-term good.
Right.
Just to respond to Dove, we're not talking about benefit to others. We're talking about benefit to the actual person himself. Okay, Dove? So, right, so now you're saying that, Doug, that what real benefit is it if there's no long term, he eventually dies? And that's exactly the statement. If you look at the statement, so then it says he will eventually be as one who never existed. He will eventually be as one who never existed. Okay, which is just strengthening the statement you just made now, Doug. Okay, and to JHSWH, you have one life, but it's a spiritual life here on earth, and it can continue eternally if a person lives properly. But right now this statement must be addressing a individual that, is not living a Torah life, when Torah is completely out of the picture. So now, the question we're asking is, why can't I say, even though with Torah out of the picture, didn't the person have some sort of a greater benefit if he lived 1,000 years than the person who only lived 1 year? So Doug, you're saying that no, because in terms of the long range, there's no real good because the person is not existing anymore. So what does this have to tell us about what is our value of good? See, this question really brings us to a very big question. How do we determine what is good? Because the statement here in the prayer is that there is no benefit to man at all. So what would be a benefit? If you lived 1,000,000 years, would that do anything? Would we say
I don't think that it's relevant to time. I think it's relevant to the development of the soul.
Agreed. But the physical life, we're agreeing already on that, that if the person's living the proper life and he develops his soul will continue to exist after he dies. That's completely agreed. But we're talking about just an earthly existence.
And it's like living like the animals.
Right. But I enjoy things, I travel, I have friendships, I have children. And Rosora is suggesting that perhaps it means that without God and His judgment, life has no sense. But it's true, we want to understand why. We'd like to see a clear explanation as to why that is. And in what manner is it as if the person never existed? Can we address that?
Well, once the person dies, then what difference will it have made to anything or anyone still remaining?
Okay, very good.
Lived 100 years.
Right, even 1,000,000 years, right?
Right. Nobody else is going to remember the steaks he ate or the, you know, good experiences he had or what the sight.
And he's not around anymore.
Right.
So what is your, you must have a view of what the good is in order to make that statement. What then, just now, elaborate then on what your philosophy is that causes you to make that statement, Doug.
Well, it would seem then that the good has a component of lasting value, value that continues on despite, you know, the ending of the particular event.
Right.
We could call it long-term consequences or something along that line.
Right, so the good, to say that man has benefit... We have to define what benefit is or what, you know, what is considered good. So we see that it seems to be tied up with endurance. Okay, and it doesn't matter how much you existed if you come to some, you know, end where there's no part of you left at all. So I believe that's what it's a bit enigmatic. It's a bit of, you know, we discussed this for quite a while until I realized that sometimes there is no next step in the question. Meaning, when we're trying to understand, well, why is it that the good, which we see from the statement, must be that which endures? I think the reasoning is because there's not really an answer. I think that is what it is. If you, good means, by definition, something which endures, meaning that it is partaking of God's will. That which God wills means that he desires it exists. But his will is directly related to existence, that which exists. So if something ceases to exist after a certain amount of time, or it never did exist, we can call that the opposite of good. It's what you can call evil. Doesn't mean a deceitful or conniving or a vicious type of evil. It just means evil means the opposite of good. It is not God's will. So if we see something, for example, human beings live and die, but the human race continues. So we say it is a good that the human race exists, because that is something which is always ever present. But an individual, it is not a good that an individual lives physically forever. Right? At least according to Maimonides. According to Nachmanides, his position is that the next world is here on earth. So he says that a body can live eternally. But for purposes of the discussion, we'll go with Maimonides for now. Just to elaborate on it, to elucidate what good means. So, for example, the universe exists. This is a good. It's not something which goes out of existence. Demons, the way the world understands them at large, are not a good, because we know that they do not exist. There's no such thing as these evil creatures running around the world that are invisible, that make man do certain things. That is a complete fantasy. So that is not a good, because it does not exist. So we see the good is directly related to existence. That which is good is that which exists. And existence means that it has permanence. So if man can achieve perfecting a soul, and he becomes attached to the Creator, that will give his soul eternal life, then he has good. But if he lives for even 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years, but then his complete existence is snuffed out, so then there really is no good, because it's not something which endures. Because that is the definition of good. Okay, let me just pause here and see if there's any comments or questions. I personally had a tough time with this. I think the reasoning was because I was looking for a next step, meaning what is good endure. So why does something endure? Why is something which endures a good? It's like asking why is water wet. You can't ask on that. That is the nature of it. That is the very definition of water. You can ask why is water in a certain shape right now. Oh, there's a condition, because the container that is holding it has a certain shape, so the water conforms. That you can ask. But you can't ask why is water wet. If you're already accepting that there is a thing of water, that means you're accepting its properties. All right. Let me hold off here for a second. See if there's any questions, comments.
Well, if we say that the only thing that's good is that which endures, then do we say that man is not good because in and of himself he does not endure?
Right. The individual man is not a good that he should exist physically forever. That is not a good. It is a good that he exists temporarily, which helps the soul reach its eternal existence. That plan is a good. But it's not, it would not, for example, if nobody ever died, that would be an evil, because you see that that's an impossibility. Since death is something that's that you can't avoid death, so therefore you must say death is a good. And we actually will say in the future, when the days of the Messiah, when the Torah is clear to everybody, and our subjective wishes are obscured by an objective realization of what is really the right system, in those days we will no longer say a reluctant type of acceptance when a person dies, but we will say the blessing, the same way like when we reach the holidays, we say, not the holidays, but we will talk about that in a good sense. We will look at death clearly as a good thing in the future, because we won't be living by subjective emotions. We'll be living by truth. So we will say that death is a good. Now it's hard for us to say that. We're living at a lower level. And I believe that's why the end of the phrase, if you take a look, Doug, and those of you online, you can see where I, on the screen, the last statement is, blessed is the true judge who kills and brings back to life. Why do we say that? Because the fact that he brings back to life shows you that's really what the good is to have that enduring existence. Just the earthly stay in itself is nothing. It's worthless. It's as if he never existed. There was no benefit. I mean, you think about it. Also, after a person dies, it's a ridiculous statement to say, well, he had a good life. You can't say he had a good life, because there is no he anymore if the person did not live the proper way. But people tend to feel that since they can imagine the person, that there is some reality to them at this point. But if a person didn't live properly, and he lived by travel and family and all this, but he didn't live a life where God was in his life at all, you cannot speak of him as having had a good life. You can't say he had a good life. There's no he. It's as if he never existed. Okay. And let me see, Rizora has a question. If we do just instinctive actions, 1 year or 1,000 years will not make difference. Just true knowledge and constant growth makes worth living, as long as possible. When talking about God bringing us back to life, it must be a different kind of life, doesn't it? Bringing us back to life, meaning restoring an existing soul into a body. That's what it's referring to, Rizora. So it's referring to a person who lived the life that you're talking about, where he was involved in knowledge and growth, and God was the focus of his life. So bringing back to life means that the soul, which is in existence and has been in a state of death, but still has been existing all this time, in the future God will restore the souls to the bodies. But that doesn't seem to apply to somebody who didn't live properly and their soul was completely terminated. But I feel what this very brief statement does is clarifies something which people really just accept blindly. You know, life is a good thing. There is this unspoken rule. But here it's trying to tell you, no, when you're at the cemetery and you're burying somebody, a loved one, a friend, well, you just go to the cemetery and you see everybody, they're the tombstones. You have to bring to mind the fact that whether or not the existence that life itself is a good, or is it dependent upon how you live your life? But life per se, no matter how long you have. So it's really something which people, I don't think, want to face, because it bothers a person to focus on our own mortality. But it is a reality, and it's something which should be in the back of our minds. It should be something which, in fact, you know, propels us to consider how we're living our life. I mean, if we will all come to an end. Now, will it be an end permanently, and there'll be nothing afterwards? Or, if we live properly, we can have an endurance, an eternity. And that should bother a person to feel that at a certain point he will just not exist anymore, when he has the ability to have an eternity in a very joyful state. So, the Torah does not openly discuss the next world because of a very important reason. If a person would live his life here because he just wants to have the next world, then in fact he won't have the next world. Because the only way you have the next world means where you have perfected your thoughts and your values, your morality, and you have seen truths in your life and they make sense to you. Meaning you came to agree with ideas because of the beauty, and you see that it makes sense to your mind. Not because of an ulterior motive. If you're just going through actions in the Torah and doing commands with some ulterior motive, then you're really not performing these things because they are of a value in themselves, then you completely miss the boat. The only way to give the soul life is that you are earnestly seeking truth, and the next world is really just, it'll be a continuation of this type of enjoyment, but it's not like a whole new thing, which I can't imagine, you know, delicious foods or, and you know, Maimonides spoke about a number of different groups of people that had different imagined views of what the next world is. And he was addressing that, evidently, that there was this, there's always been this issue, that people latch on to what they imagine the next world would be, and they completely forfeit both this world and the next world, because the real enjoyment in this world is when you're involved in using the mind, and the physical is merely servicing an existence where you enjoy ideas and you enjoy seeing truths, and you see another idea today, and that like sparks, you know, something in your mind. Wow, that's an interesting concept, and that's when you become a little bit closer to reality, and your soul is given even more attachment to truth, and that's what really will sustain the soul for an eternity. But if we're focusing on just doing all these laws, we have no idea why, but we are just assuming that by doing this, I'm going to have some greater, you know, prize waiting for me. But since the soul is the only thing which exists in the next world, so the enjoyment that you can have there can only take place if you've trained the soul to enjoy that. But if the soul was never fed properly in this life, there's nothing really that it can enjoy in the next life. All right, is it clear?
Yeah, clear.
Okay. And it should be something that we anticipate. The rabbis anticipated the next life. They looked at it as an opportunity where they would be free from physical burdens and be even more involved in God's knowledge. And since they really just reveled in it so much here, it was something which just held the greatest hopes for them in the future. And they were convinced of it, and they saw it as a truth, and it's God's promise, and it's something which we should look at positively. Rosori asking a question whether or not we're going to have the same body. Does it have sense? Yes. I think the it goes back into the same... There are prophets that talk about that, how the bones... it goes back into the same body. Okay. All right, so again, so let's just see if we'll wrap it up. Again, so the statement is, man, whether he be a year old or if he lives to 1,000 years, what benefit is it to him? Good. That's a good point, because there is no benefit if there is nothing which survives man's existence. What's the use if you live 1,000 years if eventually there's nothing left of you? That has real no value. You could say that while you're existing, you're sensing, you're traveling, you have your family. Yes, you have a certain benefit, but is that really worth anything if eventually it's completely terminated? No, that's what the blessing is saying here. It's only that which has endurance is considered to be a real good. We're not saying that there isn't any enjoyable sensations while you're in the physical state. That's not what we're discussing, because that's clearly true. There are enjoyable physical sensations. The question is whether there is any real good to that if you have a... If your existence is completely terminated at the end, then we're saying no, there is no real benefit. Because good means that which endures. That is the definition of what good is. Okay, any questions or comments?
Rabbi, wouldn't the proof of that be just following the life of somebody who lives purely through physical pleasures, and you see that it usually is a slippery slide downward?
Right. But if we can divorce it from any type of evil doing, let's say a person lived without the Torah, but he was good to his family. He had no idea of God, though, but he was good to his family, and they had joyful vacations together. They had happy times, they always had money, they traveled, they had good foods, a person like that. So then we don't have any real evil, but the fact is that if it was just a pure physical existence and God was not part of it, so the soul does not exist afterwards, so we're saying there's no real benefit to that in terms of what good is. We have to remain true to the definition. that good means that which has endurance, that which partakes of God's will. That is always what the what truth and goodness is. It has to be which God determines. What did He create in this entire universe? He's the one that gives the right definition of what is good and what is not. That's why when people say, you know, people are not observant, they say, well, God wants me to really do is be a good person. So the response is, well, you know, the Torah seems to have a little couple more pages more than what you just summed up. But it's a way out because it sounds nice. The Torah even talks about that. The Torah has a quote where it says that people will feel that they're going in the goodness, in the freeness of my heart, because I go in the freeness of what my heart tells me is right. So they feel that they are doing the right thing. But God says, no. That is such a strong opinion that is one of the few opinions that the Torah actually puts into the verses. It says, no. I believe that's where it says that God will add on all those sins that you did by accident, and He'll consider them as willful sins because you have completely distorted the system. You think that whatever your heart tells you, whatever you feel inside, that's the barometer of what true and goodness is? That's the barometer of my will? No. That's a very big mistake. If a person wants to know what is truly good in life, he has to confer with God. God's the one who determined what is good, what is evil. Not us. Okay. And Rosora, you're making a statement that you remember reading that the next life will not be physical. We won't have to eat or sleep. Right. So according to that view, so we don't have the body anymore. The body ceases, and then we continue to exist in purely a metaphysical existence. Okay? Any other questions? Okay. And Razur is writing, what about a person who takes 50 years to get close to God? If he or she dies before, he or she will not have part of the next world, or is it possible that God already knows the potential? Yeah, of course God knows everybody's potential. And if a person is on the path to live properly, God will help that person to reach what they can. God's not going to stop a person from sinning, but if a person, let's say, like, you know, some of the greatest rabbis, Rabbi Akiva, didn't start to live a proper life until he was 40. And look, he was able to bring himself to one of the heights of human perfection, one of the greatest rabbis that we have. So God knows exactly when to give the person the opportunity. A person has the opportunity, and now it's up to us to take advantage of it and to live each day as best as we can on that path. That's all we can do. Okay. All right, so that's really what I wanted to address. I thought it was a very salient point, and not to focus on it too much, because, again, our focus should be, we're not living for the next world for the reasons that we explained, because then it takes our shift off of looking at the ideas and attaching ourselves to them because of the truth of the ideas themselves. But this is something which does have to be discussed. This is part of the whole picture. All right. Cal, any questions? Doug?
No, I think that's clear.
Okay. Are we on for next week?
Yes, we are.
Yes, okay. I guess Doug left already.
Yes, he did.
Okay, so he wanted to start investigating more just practical in terms of the Noahide laws. So that'll be the focus now.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll start getting into that, go through the Gemaras, you know, different areas of the Talmud, and we'll start working on that next Sunday, God willing. All right?
Sounds good.
All right, then. So listen, have yourself a good week. Thanks again. Doug had sent in a nice contribution, so I sent him an email back. I want to make sure he got my response, so thanks to both of you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. All right, then. So listen, have yourself a great week. And I look forward to learning more on Sunday next week.
Us too.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Cal, be well. Okay, so that concludes today's session. We'll put it online shortly. If you missed any part, feel free to go to the new postings or the audio page, and you'll be able to hear the entire class. And until next week, everybody enjoy and learn well, and we'll see you then.